Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The State Department. The nominee is a very well-known senator from Florida, Mr. Rubio. What is to be done? I welcome Mary Kissel, a veteran of the State Department for the first Trump term, Mike Pompeo in the secretary's chair. However, the challenges are remarkably the same after 4 years of Mr. Biden's contrary understanding of international relations. The word appeasement is not appropriate. I'll just say accommodating adversaries and pretty much ignoring or bossing around allies. We're going to concentrate on the good parts, which is what is to be done. Mary, a very good evening to you. I begin with Iran because it's the unconquered trouble, at least since Jimmy Carter's time, if not before. And Mr. Carter's passing gives us a moment to reflect on what hasn't worked these many decades. Iran is a rogue state. It also is a predator state. However, its economy has now collapsed to the point that it's impossible to believe it could make a comeback. The last quote I had was 801 or 802,000 rials to the dollar. 800,000 rials. The money's worthless. The regime has lost credibility. It's lost the war. All of its so-called stooges, the octopus arms, have been defeated or are on their way to defeat. They're qualified. They're challenged. Israel has been successful. So we turn to the State Department. What is to be done about Iran? What can be done? I believe the term was maximum pressure once upon a time. Is that still useful? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John, and Happy New Year. Well, the irony of the Biden term is that it's actually Israel that has done the lion's work to deal with the threat from Tehran, most notably after that, the horrific events in Israel of the killing of so many innocents. It was Israel that has decapitated the leadership of Iran-backed proxies, Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in Gaza. And now they are turning their attention to Yemen, where the Iran-backed Houthis have effectively shut down international shipping in the Red Sea, which, of course, impacts us here in the United States. And so it is not the United States that has led on Iran policy. It has been Israel. I think that's about to change with the incoming Trump administration. The president, as you mentioned, took a very, very hard stance toward Iran in the first term. The maximum pressure campaign was a combination of things. It was distinct pressure to shut down oil exports from Iran, which is the main source of funding to the regime. It was a pressure campaign to get our friends and allies to stop allowing the national airline of Iran, which ferries terrorists, money, and weapons around the world, to prevent them from getting landing rights. It was a campaign, in international organizations to exert pressure on the regime. That wasn't as successful because our friends in Britain, France, and Germany, for instance, wouldn't go in for snapback sanctions, believe it or not. But by and large, it did successfully constrain financially the regime and therefore constrained its ability to fund its terrorism. Iran is the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. So I think that the Trump too will return to that strategy. They will unreservedly back Israel. And I think that will lead to more peace and stability in the region because we need to be clear about who our friends and enemies are. And it's pretty obvious. It's been more than 40 years of an Islamist regime in Tehran that states very, very clearly that they want to exterminate Israel and they want to kick Western nations out of the region. So I think that the Trump team has a playbook. I see many of the people who were involved in implementing that playbook returning to the administration. And you see the president using the same language. So I think the president is serious when he says he wants all of the hostages returned in Israel to their families. And if there won't, there will be consequences. And that kind of deterrence is what's been lacking over the last 4 years. And that's why we've seen such chaos in the region. I think that that's about to end.
Ukraine. The news from Ukraine is fog of war, but there is said to be a counterattack underway in the Kursk salient, which means the fighting is on Russian territory. Mr. Putin has teased the idea of meeting with Mr. Trump, saying something vague like, "I haven't talked to him in 4 years." However, Ukraine remains unsolved, not only for the United States, but also for the European Union, that is going through a wave of elections that appear to be rejecting the story so far in Ukraine. These are challenges that the Biden administration failed to solve, and now Mr. Rubio inherits them. And what is the way forward, Mary?
Well, the State Department doesn't exactly have a record of success when it comes to Ukraine. And that's true across administrations. It's a difficult place. It's a young democracy. It's corrupt. But when Russia invaded again in such a comprehensive way, the Biden administration reacted with fear and was deterred by Moscow and offered Zelensky a ride out of town instead of offering him military support. And this, you know, wasn't a surprise, remember, because it was the Biden intelligence team that warned the world that Russia was about to invade. So it wasn't as if they didn't have time to think about what they were going to do. I think what that episode revealed was the appeasement instincts of the Biden team. And when you appease dictators, it never works, because dictators respect one thing: power and force. And so it was always, that approach was always going to fail with Putin. Now, you asked about the incoming Secretary of State and President Trump. They're inheriting a terrible hand. They're inheriting a stalled war with neither side willing to come to the table, no incentive to come to the table. And so it's going to be up to Secretary of State Rubio, National Security Advisor Waltz, and President Trump to come up with a strategy that works. I have long believed that President Trump will likely take the same tack that he did in the first term, namely to offer to talk on the one hand, the carrot, and then bring the hammer down, the stick, on the other side by taking a suite of measures, by unleashing U.S. energy, which will essentially take away the Russian regime's main source of income, by sanctioning the regime, by bringing allies on board with us, such as Germany, who even today is still very reluctant to distance himself from Moscow. They're very economically intertwined. By convincing the nations of Europe to start buying U.S. oil and gas to get off the Russian pipelines. That's the stick. And I think, too, that if the Russians don't come to the table, I think President Trump will be very happy to continue aid to Ukraine, because he could then say, look, I tried. I tried to get them to the table. They won't come to the table. Therefore, they're going to get more sticks and fewer carrots. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see that playbook play out. And President Trump has great credibility with Putin, because in the first term, he sanctioned his inner circle. He withdrew from the INF Treaty with unanimous NATO support. He got the international organization that deals with chemical weapons to sanction the Russians. We kicked Russian spies out in concert with our allies. I've said this ad nauseum on your program, John, but I feel like I need to repeat it every time we talk about Putin. President Trump is not some Putin stooge, quite the opposite. He's probably the guy that President Putin wants least in the Oval Office, because President Trump is very willing to punish him. And I tend to think, given Putin's initial statements and his reluctance to engage with the incoming administration, not to mention Keith Kellogg, who's supposed to be a special envoy, I think he has an incredibly difficult task. I tend to think that it's going to be more sticks rather than carrots, given Putin's unwillingness to come to the table.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 million protection package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.